I swear to you, I was never so alive as when I was winning this throne, or so dead as now that I've won it.
Welcome to 2C1C, a Game of Thrones podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Greg Atkinson, and Brett Zeiler. Now hosted by myself, Daryl Lloyd, and Kyle Vansel, with guest appearances by past hosts and more. Many thanks to GRRM and FFG for making this possible, CarGameDB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons music you hear in this episode. Welcome to Season 4.5.
There we go.
Konnichiwa, bitches!
Whoa, wow. Kyle's just jumping right on that. He's really gonna just beat this horse.
You are not gonna beat me to it this week, Will.
Yeah, no, I'm not. Yeah, that, in fact, I think that horse is past dead. not sure what it is. I think maybe Kyle's hoping he can just bring it back around to the other side.
I just need Thoros. I need to find Thoros and bring my horse back.
Convince him to French kiss a horse.
Then I'll just keep beating the horse. He'll bring it back. It'll be great.
It'll pretty much just be exactly like Beric.
Yes.
Well then, welcome to Two Champs and a Chump. That was obviously Kyle. I'm Will, also known as Kenan. And we also have...
Errol. Also known as Daryl.
Yeah. You know, I really think you ought to make up a new name for the various websites.
I think so.
You know, because as often as you post as Gearhalt, I think you really ought to just be Daryl. Just Daryl. Nothing else.
I think you're right.
That, or in case somebody already took the name Daryl, you should be just Daryl.
Just Daryl.
Yeah.
You're right.
We will proclaim your justice to the realm. You will be a just and good Daryl.
That's right. So, I hear we got a spoiler.
Yeah, FFG was kind enough to pass along another card to us, this time from the last chapter pack of the cycle, which should be debuting very soon after people are listening to this episode. So, yeah, who wants to throw this one on us?
I will do it. So, our exclusive spoiler is a Baratheon card, and it is one Mr. Robert Baratheon. He is unique, 4 cost, I should say as well. He is a lord and a king, he is a military and a power icon, prize 2 with renown, and he reads response. After you win a challenge in which a prize character participated, Robert Baratheon claims 1 power. And that sweet quote we had this morning, I say this morning, during the episode, has come off of this card, which is a nice little way to bring it full circle.
Yeah.
I really, really dig this guy. Now, I know what you're thinking. Whenever you first see him, you're like, well, we already got double renowned Robert, and I could still have my King Stannis. That is very true, but I think that this guy's going to have some sweet utility with some of the cards that have come out here recently. Although he's not a noble crest, like, come on, man.
He's not. But he is 4 strength, so there's a boost. I mean, like I said, he seems kind of like a trade. There's some pluses and minuses that make him, in my mind, pretty equal to the double renown Bob. Because it's worth noting for listeners that Robert is just looking at the number of challenges won, not the number of characters, so don't accidentally make the mistake of trying to claim 3 power when Robert and 2 of those little smugglers are all in the same power challenge. So, you know, most of the time, Robert is going to participate in a couple challenges and get 2 power, though there's a little bit of marginal upside, maybe sneaking someone else into an intrigue challenge and getting something out of it. And he's a king, which is interesting. I think Kyle had stronger thoughts on his traits, though.
I really hated that he was a king. I really liked the last set of cycles where we got all the Bear Brothers in different forms and the fact that he does not play nice with the others. I like that the king is not a downside for him, so that's at least good. For prize too, he probably shouldn't be, but I am a little bummed that he can't run it with Stannis.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that. Whenever I first saw him recently, I've been using a neutral no agenda deck, which, yes, it's terrible, but it's really fun, and I'm working on it. But I use the Seasoned Smugglers right now to stand my Daenerys and my Tyrion, but he will obviously slot in just fine with those guys, so they'll be able to stand him. Or, you know, and say Robert's the only prize guy you have on the board. Well, if you win again on defense, you know, and your opponent controls prize guys, like, you still would claim power for that. You don't have to control a prize character. You just have to win a challenge in which a prize character participated. So there's some utility there, I think, that can be nice.
Okay.
But I think he's going to cause
a good point, too. I had kind of missed when I glanced at it that it didn't have to be your character that participated in it. So you could win something on defense that has a prized character in it. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it's neat. Obviously, I think the reason they're not having noble crests on like Daenerys and this guy is just to make it harder to keep those characters alive, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. Or, that makes the prized actually count. If you had 2 turns where you just pretty well knew off the bat that prize didn't matter at all, I think that would be an issue.
Yeah. There was something else I was going to say about this guy, but I'm totally blanking. Whatever. He's awesome.
I mean, at worst, he is double ran on Bob. I mean, he triggers himself. He will get you the 2 power. Now, but you look at it with, especially with their monocon guys, I mean, those guys are great on offense. They're just as good on defense. I mean, if Bob is out and they have one of those mono icon guys, are you going to do a power challenge at them? I mean, how often do you have a 2 strength solo power icon? Like, it's not as anywhere near as common as Bear is going to have. It's just, I mean, it's more pressure. It's what Barra wants. It's more ways. And anything that will get you power in a different way is great. And this is something that can trigger if you build your deck right, like Daryl's trying to do with his rainbow deck thing, is you know, it's like, if you can trigger that 2-3 times around, I mean, that's a lot of power, and it builds up quick.
Mm-hmm.
So I like him a lot. Price 2 is normally really scary, but again, I just don't think it's a con out of Barra. We see with Martathion that they love it. It's almost a pro because you can pump it on early game.
Right.
So, but I like him. And with the other House Aaron 4-cost love stuff that we know we're getting next cycle, having this nice 4-strength character you can build around in Barra is really nice.
Yeah. I think he's excellent. I really do. I'll be interested to see the rest of the pack that he is in, the rest of those cards. So if there's more in there to complement him.
Yeah, I think he's a worthy contender for sure. I feel like he's actually another one of the few good, evocative prized cards and candidates for that ability that we've seen in this cycle. And I like that he kind of ties that whole theme together for Barra, so I'm tentatively optimistic.
Okay, so recently, obviously, I'm very in love with this Seasoned Smuggler with all of these different prize characters. But
oh, we know.
Riddle me this. I know, right? Riddle me this. Not just characters, though. I mean, I've even been using it with whatever it was called, Longship Grey Wind or whatever. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so with Oh my gosh, Jockin. I can give him prized, right? I just can't give him prized one. Is this right?
But you can give him prized one.
No, I don't think so.
I can't give him prized? Okay.
Didn't the question entry in the FAQ clarify, again, I say in the wrong part of the FAQ, that he cannot gain, qualified keywords? And prized then would be a qualified keyword because prized by itself does nothing. It needs another value to go with it.
Okay. I just wasn't sure. That could just be another terrible way to stand Jockin, but that's fine. Mm-hmm. Dang it. I wanted to make those terrible plays.
Emphasis on terrible. All right, and we've got other big news. Of course, there's a little bit of a delay here. I'm sure the listeners have already seen this and been mulling it over in their own heads. There were new tourney rules and a new FAQ released. Of course, they were already out when last week's episode went out, but as we said then, we just didn't want to try and do a four-hour episode to cover that and the chapter pack. So we tackled the CP first, and we've got the new rules stuff this week. So how about we tackle that tournament rules document first? I think it's got the shorter entry here. There's one really key thing changed here for authorized cards. There's a special note that although it may be released during the show, the A Dire Message chapter pack in the Conquest and Defiant cycle will not be legal for the Gen Con 2014 North American Joust and Melee Championship events. Kind of a bummer, but understandable. Still, it seems to insinuate we might have that new pack in just a couple weeks. So, I'm pumped. It's going to have wheels within wheels, so I'll abuse that for a week or two before something terrible happens to it.
Hmm.
Yeah, but
you
there's
the last week or two.
Well, I don't know. It's anybody's guess how things go, but you know, people just keep brainstorming more and more and more ideas on how to abuse it. So it really makes me think that something's gonna happen to it very quickly.
Maybe.
That's an entirely different topic. But you know what else the tourney rules have? And interestingly enough, this is simultaneously the very first change that we come across in the new FAQ. That is the update to the restricted lists for both Joust and Melee this time around. Not often that they both get an update. Not often anything happens to the Melee list at all, really. So, what do we have here? I've just been talking a bit. Kyle, why don't you go ahead and throw the first edition on us?
You don't want to do that.
Because you don't have it in front of you, do you?
Wow.
All right. Fair enough. I'll go ahead and throw the first one out there. This one is Naval Escort. Guys, did I hear a sigh just now?
Yes. There was a sigh just now.
How come?
Well, I understand. Like, naval escorts are really good. I completely understand that. I mean, they do have the caveat, if that's the right word I'm looking for here, that they get discarded if you don't control any Greyjoy characters. Now, I realize that Grand Good Brother has been a huge pain in the ass for most people, but I mean, I understand where it was coming from. I just don't like it. Like, that card's been around for so long, and I realized that using it with Longship Maiden's Bane, there's really good synergies there, but I just feel like that's kind of what the deck does. I think that of the cards that we've seen put on here, I feel like that one can be taken off, or will be taken off, I should say, earlier than most. You know what I mean? Like, we're already making tech in the game to smack down characters with higher strength than their cost. And I think if we just keep in that direction in order and make those card types playable, then we could easily see it off. But I understand with the old way, but the old way's kind of fallen off right now. So I don't know if it's necessarily a great idea to kick it in the nuts. So.
Well, I don't know. It's debatable how much it's fallen off there. It has locally here, but it is, through this regional season at least, still far and away the most popular Greyjoy deck, and performing quite well out of Greyjoy decks, at least. So, it doesn't surprise me to see something like Naval Escort. I think the strength boost that it provided on top of Longship Maiden's Bane itself could sure cause for some awkwardness getting challenges through. And Grant did make it, much harder than it used to be to get it out of the way. So, it maybe wouldn't have been my first thought or guess. I think I probably would have looked at Grant instead. I'm not terribly surprised or anything like that. I think I'm fairly approving.
I think with some of the other things on the list that are coming up, Greyjoy gets hit hard enough. It'll be interesting to see how those play out. And Daryl raised a good point with some of the stuff that's coming out that hits these characters with a higher strength. So maybe this is something that is a temporary measure. I could see being on Kane a bit for coming off in future FAQs.
Okay. Well, let's see. What do we have next, then? We have... looks like the Art of Seduction from Lions of the Rock was added. Now, this one definitely surprised me, I have to say. I heard Bruno kind of talking about it at our regional... But I halfway wondered if some of that was grumbling due to losing to Sandy's Meridian Rush. but part of it does kind of make sense to me. We've seen control just hammered and hammered, certainly with the previous FAQ. Well, sorry, not counting the emergency FAQ, but the pre-regional update. And that really pushed some of these rush builds higher and higher, and Marathion can go off quite quickly when things go well for it. So I can see Art of Seduction kind of making that a little more vulnerable. Plus, it's just really, really annoying to play against. I know from the Art of Seduction period that we went through here about a month ago. Yeah, that was just annoying as hell.
Yeah, from the first time I saw that card, I was just like, oh my god, this is great. There was sarcasm in my voice. Huge fan of the Art of Seduction. I just don't like it. I don't think there's enough of a stipulation there. Maybe it should have maybe had a higher initiative, and maybe if a player revealed a plot with lower initiative than you or something like that, I think that would have been a little more productive of the card. So I understand why it's on there. We want to see an escalation in rush decks, or at least non-control decks, and but we at the same time we're still trying to keep the game balanced. So I completely understand that move, and I'm okay with it, really. And I think that most people will be okay with it. I mean, I don't see a huge reason to be pissed off about that asinine card.
I didn't feel like a lot of the from the Martathion decks that I've seen, a lot of people treated their restricted card slot kind of like a luxury, if you will. It's like, everything I need isn't restricted. The core of what makes this deck up, so what flavor or little boost I want to give it, whether that be Fear Winter or Orphans or whatever. I've seen different ones, but I feel like it was always like a luxury card for them. It was never like a core idea. So now, making them give that up and going to our seduction. If the game plan sticks to the win turn two or go home, it takes away some of that resiliency, some of these cards that made it that much better. And I think it adds some of that risk factor back into the rush aspect. I think the deck is still very viable. I think it's still going to be very popular. I think it's going to rein in that power level just a little bit, make it more manageable.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Well, there we go. And we're on to the next two. This one, I'm going to read these together here. Because, boy, they're only on there. Well, maybe not only, but they are on there because of each other. That's Desperate Measures and Blessed by the Maiden, both from the Song of the Sea cycle. I mean, I've went on at length in the past. I don't feel the Desperate Measures, well, really, or Blessed by the Maiden was the actual linchpin of what it was put on here to combat. They were put on here to combat the infinite combo decks that we saw a couple of crop up and take down a couple tournaments this regional season, you know, that want to just mill out their whole deck and then cycle something for infinity. And I still say it is the ability to generate the infinite resources that actually causes that particular problem. You know, these one was just a filter card, and the other was until these were uncovered, a kind of blah recursion effect. I'm pretty sure we rated it not great at the time, but that sure wouldn't be the first time that we rated something and it turned out to be better in the end. So, you know, from the interaction with Prince's Plans on it, it was proved to be much better than the initial reaction. So I don't know. I'm not enthused to see these. Blessed by the Maiden, I don't care about as much, I suppose, as Desperate Measures, because damn it, Nate, you're back to throwing darts at my favorite deck. Because the deck that I took to regionals, both regionals I went to this year, was another variation on my Baratheon Reanimator deck. And you know what? It really enjoyed having Desperate Measures to offset the fact that it didn't have a setup, because it's pretty well locked into playing Knights of the Hollow Hill to have influence now, because King's Landing, or sorry, the Red Keep was restricted, and you know, there's just several restricted list changes I don't agree with and their implications, and this is definitely one of them.
Wow. I feel a lot more strongly on this than I do. I'm okay with either of these, mainly because I didn't use either of those cards. I do remember the counter production, if you will, of Blessed by the Maiden, and you know, that crazy mill your deck and now you're getting whatever you want kind of back into it. I understand that. I mean, I feel the same way. I don't think that the problem is necessarily with the events. I've always said that, you know, we bring up this rule of three thing, and I don't know if people completely understand my stance on it. I don't think that there should be some written rule in the rule book that should say rule of three, you know, only trigger something three times, but we're seeing a lot of characters being the centric part of this, and I just think that all characters that have any type of stand or kneel effects should just be a limit three times per round or phase, whichever one works. That's always the way I felt about it. I understand, though, right now, getting ready for Worlds, or not Worlds, but the North American Championship, I understand wanting to not have any of that garbage go through your national championship and make a mockery of it, if you will. They want it to be as clean as they can, and they don't want to see any negative backlash from the community about it. So I understand the short-term solution. I hope that we get something a little more in the future, though.
The Blessed Measures of a Desperate Maiden was an unfortunate situation, but I have to be honest, part of me is kind of glad to see it go. I mean, combo needs to exist. I think it increases the health of the meta. as something you have to account for. But reining it in a little bit might have been the right move. Time will tell, and we'll just see how it plays out. But
yeah. I mean, I agree. I love combos. I'm right there with you. I love me a good combo. I was not a fan of any of those combos. Those don't seem fun to me.
Depends on how you look at fun. Obviously, FFG's definition of fun doesn't include them. I wanted to wait and let the meta at least try to counter them instead of running to FFG for an answer. But, you know, the meta didn't want to try that, so, you know, we'll just keep moving on, I guess.
I mean, I understand that, though. I understand not wanting it to sit there in the meta, not wanting players to experience that. And, like, we have it every year where somebody shows up at Gen Con who has never really done a tournament before or anything, and they just show up to play. Would you really want them to sit there for, like, 40 minutes while some ass clown mills himself or whatever and finally has his combo, so you're sitting there so he can do his combo and claim his 15 power and jerk off in the bathroom or whatever he's going to do? No, you wouldn't. So I understand that.
I mean, yeah, you know, any losing thing is just not a great feeling, especially if you're a new person at a tournament. I mean, you walk into that tournament and face down Lanny Hyperneal, and you don't get to make a challenge the entire game, you know? Like, stuff like that happens, and it sucks, and those people very well might be pissed. I saw a great argument on the Card Game DB forums by a player whose name eludes me right off the top of my head now. I believe one of the British guys, who basically said, like, the entire point of a tourney deck is to be an NPE. Like, because you are trying to win, you are trying to crush the other person's game plan.
Oh, yeah.
Completely. You know, when you break it down like that, it starts to feel kind of arbitrary and nebulous.
Well, I see where that's coming from, and I couldn't get more on board with having a deck that is just meant to crush your opponent. But it doesn't feel like the Game of Thrones when you're sitting there with sickly Jojen Reed doing some douchebaggy stuff where you're milling the top cards of your deck. Like, that's not a thing. It's not a thing.
Does it feel like Game of Thrones when you build your Targ Lannister Conquest deck and have Tywin and Daenerys on the board at the same time?
Yes! I haven't read those books. I don't know what happens. It's a magical world. No, I mean, I see where you're coming from there, but the idea is, you know, you're conquesting the other house. You're taking control of the realm. You're not milling yourself to reveal your plot however many times you need to, or whatever the different combos are. I mean, I understand the intent there. Nobody wants their game to diminish down to being something simple, if you will. I mean, I realize some of these combos rather complex, but the idea is just so awful. Like, it's not like a game. It's like running a race, but you're not running a race. You're actually riding in a pool right next to where the track is, and you're on like a jet ski or something. You're doing something totally different, but you're within the boundaries for some reason. You know what I mean?
Like, that was sure an interesting analogy.
I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm terrible.
No. It was fine. It was just not one I would have ever guessed.
That's right. Well, I mean, I had to bring it around, you know.
Yeah.
Get you on my level.
Yeah.
Welcome to the inside of my head.
I mean, I'm not sure in the end I agree. I mean, I guess my point is just that, you know, maybe after a month of people trying to crack them and tech against them and whatnot, or 2 months or something, maybe I would have just agreed, you know what, it's just not possible, let's just trash the whole thing and be done with it. But, you know, it just doesn't feel like we did that, so.
Alright.
Kyle, do you actually want to contribute to that, or,
No, Daryl did enough.
Daryl did enough. The man, the way you said that, I don't know if that's good or bad, but.
Do I have to bring the jet ski story back in? Or the jet ski analogy? Is that what you want?
I think I want a shirt for Gen Con that's a picture of you riding a jet ski next to a track as somebody runs.
I want that entire story written on a shirt. So it's like you're having a race.
Oh, it'd be great. Okay, well, we're headed on to the next one, and this one I do agree with. This is Arion Martell from the King's Road cycle. And I have to say, the last deck that I had been playing prior to this FAQ dropping, and yes, I'm aware it had that delay till August 1st before it went into effect, but hey, how many people really paid attention to that? Anyway, it was definitely a Martell deck, using Rivers, using Arion, using a little bit of Maester sub-theme to cycle through stuff with Citadel Law, and just zipping through those plots. Now, granted, it was a Song of Fire deck, not Bloodthirst like most people were complaining about, but I definitely saw the absurd kind of card advantage that generated over a very short amount of time. Even just a couple cycles really got pretty far, and the river plots help you keep Arion running over and over. So I'm okay to see her dialed down just a little bit, so that she can't be used with some of Martell's other power cards.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's an incredibly powerful effect. Manipulating the plot deck, and other cards we had seen printed before her is why we never ran them. And when I mean not good, I mean they had a balanced stipulation. Some could only happen in the plot phase. Others, you had to kneel this location and discard it and pay a gold and lose a challenge or win a challenge, or kneel 5 influence, or kneel 3 if it's summer.
You have to pay a gold for Arion.
You have to pay a gold for Arion.
That's true. You can only do it during the Shadows window of each phase.
So 7 opportunities.
Yeah. Whichever one's the most advantageous to you.
Oh, maybe guess, only 6 if we count between, you know, taxation and the plot phase. I don't know.
Well, less than that, because barring some other shenanigans, you're not going to have gold in the plot or draw or the beginning of the marshalling phase. Entire because of her shadows, so.
Well, in Rivers you can. But I most of the time.
But yeah, and I guess I should also say not just Martell's other good stuff, but also this other restricted card coming up that she can't be used with any longer.
Right.
We'll get to that one.
Sure. Kyle, what do you think?
I think she's a dirty bitch.
But a foxy one.
Well then.
All right,
I ran her all the time. She was great, but
she was
insane in insane like utility, the ways you could use her. She was a very, you know, a wide use of applications with her, and just lots of powerful combos. We talk about all the ways that people are going to break wheels or trying to break wheels within wheels. Same kind of stuff can happen with her. So
maybe half of the same sorts of things.
True, but I mean she was a very powerful effect. I mean, she was one of the few things that got around Art of Seduction, which was so good it had to be restricted.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a card that bests a restricted card. I mean, that logic and that to me just goes to show you how powerful an effect can be. I don't know. Like, she needs to be on here. Everyone I tried from talking to thought she needed to be on here. She's very solid, but you can chalk her up as the restricted Martell card number 243 or whatever number she is.
Yeah. Yeah, you were actually the first person I played against using her. I remember at Worlds last year when we were practicing in the hotel lobby, I think it was, the night before Worlds. Yeah. And then I got to see how powerful it was to reveal of valor. I think maybe you get at the start of like a challenge phase or something. And I was like, oh, that is possible. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I choose a late addition to my Worlds deck last year because that pack had just come out. And, I mean, we forget about how awesome the claim-raising Ariane is, but she says not. It shows you how good the Shadows one is, that it is was hardly even a debate if you run her or the old one. And the old one was phenomenal, and also auto in Martell decks. And you'll see her again now, obviously. But I ran her for the longest time, and I said, you know what, she's new, let's just try her out. And I played a couple games with Will, and I mean, I was like, this is awesome to flip into whatever you need in the moment to... It's kind of like the effects you got from, like, Betrayal at the Wall. It's like, I can see your plot, I see the board, I can make whatever choice I need to, and once I have the gold, I can do it at any phase. It was even back then, before plot cycling was a thing, like, just the reaction with a plot was phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, send us on to the next one?
Yep.
All right. Yep. Still in the King's Road cycle, this one is Bloodthirst. And really, I think I have to say, in the end, I don't agree with this. Bloodthirst wasn't turning out the tourney numbers that made it look just crazy, intimidating, like people were, you know, clamoring was going to happen. Definitely after that last pre-regional update, it slammed it into the ground. It pulled back up some with Ariane and River Plots and things. But, I mean, at this point, the classic Bloodthirst deck here, I've gotten quotes. Now, aside from Bloodthirst now, we'll have Restricted Ariane, The Red Keep, Westeros Bleeds, Desperate Measures, Blessed by the Maiden, Prince's Plans. Oh, and that next card that we'll be talking about at the moment, it's a plot. I'm sure you can figure out what it is, dear listeners. Like, I really think on top of all of those tools, they probably could have left Bloodthirst itself off at this point, and it would have been just fine.
Yeah. I think what's so interesting about what's happening right now with Martell, you know, all those cards do things that are so different, you know. They don't necessarily hit into one theme. I'm just finding it interesting about how much trouble FFG is having with balancing Martell. Now, that's a discussion for another day, I know, but it's just kind of interesting.
Yeah. That one house is the worst one.
Yeah. Well, it's the best one, you mean.
Yeah. Sorry. What was that you started to say, Kyle?
I said it's just kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It is.
But it is funny that, like, this house historically has been one that has had balancing issues.
Oh, all the way back to the CCG era.
I don't know why efficiency is like a Martell thing, but it is.
Right, and you know, maybe you go in from here on out and you try to maybe create a new theme for them in some way. But I don't know, like, a lot of those cards do things totally different that you would think would require a different type of build. You know, Venomous Blade kills dudes. Like, does that make sense to run it with Bloodthirst? Like, I don't know. We could go on and on, but obviously Venomous Blade was on their way before that, but you get what I'm saying. Like, so, totally different types of cards.
So in the end then, do you guys feel like Bloodthirst, the agenda, needed to be on here to balance out Martell at large or the Bloodthirst deck in specific at this point?
I mean, it's on there right now just for that, you know, Bloodthirst, Uber Viper, resets, Blessed by the Maiden to, you know, shuffle some crap back in, that kind of, I mean,
yeah,
that's
but it can't
away
do
from
all of that stuff anymore because all of the other stuff got put on the restricted list.
Right, I understand. I think it's their way of foolproofing it for now. I really do. I don't think it'll stay on there for long.
Go ahead.
I think that it is an agenda that FFG has wanted Martell to have for a long time, you know. I mean, it is perfect synergy with Prince of the Sun Red Viper, you know, and they've made other cards to kind of help facilitate that with some of the Sand Snakes that have come out and whatnot. So I don't think it's going to last long. I honestly think it's just a band-aid for now. Just like, okay, we want to make sure that we go through the North American Championship very smoothly and there's not a lot of controversy as to, you know, we'd hate for this, you know, one of these weird 50-minute win decks to come all the way up through the top and win. And I realize that some people do like to play like that. I understand that. I'm not trying to judge you or anything, but I am saying that FFG wants no part of it in their big publicized tournaments.
Yeah, I'm with Daryl. I think this is getting the old Stark Winter House of Pain treatment where sometimes you just, to make sure it's out, you smash with a real, real big hammer and then you figure out what you don't need to have on there. Because if you look at, same thing happened when Stark Winter, the same year as House of Pain, that's weird, had all those pieces get restricted, and slowly we've seen a lot of those come off, the exception being Mira. And I think you're going to kind of see the same thing, that this needs eradicated, and they can now sleep at night knowing there's no physical way that anything resembling those decks is going to show up, and then as they feel comfortable, those pieces will slowly start to fall off until you... Bloodthirst becomes what I think they always wanted to be, which is a character light, maybe something akin to... like the old way. If I had to guess, like what they were envisioning, something with a few characters with lots of pumps and events and whatnot.
Oh yeah, and the control to help them. And oh yeah,
you mean so that, exactly what it did do?
In a way, I think they're wanting you to, you know, build your deck with more than like three characters or four characters.
Yeah,
I think the idea is to have less characters. You know, the paramour that discards herself. The skirmisher that kills himself and you draw a card and, you know, your opponent discards one, like that kind of, I think that's sort of the flavor they wanted to go for in original design.
You know, I really have to say, I think in this case, now that you guys brought that up, I think Bloodthirst is a victim of the trend towards only, like, using the restricted list as the only tool at FFG's disposal rather than the other options like Errata. Where, you know, it makes me think if the Bloodthirst was envisioned as a low character but not borderline no character deck, I mean, there are tons of agendas with building restrictions in their rules text. You know, Bloodthirst maybe instead of going on the restricted list should have gotten an errata that said, you know, your deck must contain at least 15 characters. Or something along the line, those lines, which would allow it to have few, but must have a noticeable amount, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's a victim of things outside its control, and I think with all the other restrictions that this one might be one that could have been left off, but I think you're right, you want to get through Gen Con as smoothly as possible and go from there.
Yeah, I would hate, like, if you look at Bloodthirst in a vacuum, you just look at the agenda. I mean, when it first came out, I mean, I knew it was going to be good. But everybody else was like, hey, this looks like Gar. I say everybody else, you know what I mean? But, like, you know, you first look at it and you're like, oh, man, this sucks. Like, what happens if my opponent controls less characters? He gets to draw two cards. Like, it's very balanced if you just look at the card. The problem is the card pool that goes along with it. And then all those guys who are way smarter than I am build these decks to, take full advantage of that agenda. You know, you look at Knights of Hollow Hill in a vacuum. I mean, I don't get a setup, but I get, you know, 2-2-2 doesn't look as balanced. Just saying.
I forgot.
I didn't leave you a lot of room to say anything. It was just a little thought I had. Like,
yeah. No, I'm back.
Okay. Go ahead.
I think part of it is that it's almost like FFG is trying to just limp along so we can get to whatever card pull solution we have waiting after Worlds.
Yeah, I agree.
Just keep the game stomachly healthy, which I think it is. Keep it healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I feel overall like the last 6 months of the game have really seen a ton of different decks be viable, and the tourney results according to the annals I really think honestly show a pretty even split among the houses, or at least you know, as even as you can reasonably expect in a living game.
No, I think the health is good, but I think their goal isn't so much long-term as it is, I mean, because you have to assume whatever they announce, that all of this is going to have to change. Your restricted list, blah, 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 like all the like power levels, all the combos become totally different, whatever it is. So I think a lot of it is, you know, getting the things healthy now, not long-term. So you're not thinking about, well, the Red Keep's been around forever. Well, yes, but right now it's a problem, so we're going to hit it.
Right.
The thought that all of this is getting readdressed in November.
Right, yeah. Basically, yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at, is that, like, Bloodthirst, I think that FFG likes Bloodthirst, obviously. I think that they want to make it to where it will be played, you know, a fair amount. Like I said, it's very balanced. We just have to find a way to make it to where it can't be exploited nearly as hard. Obviously, anytime you're building a deck with an agenda that has a downside, you're going to do your best to mitigate that downside, obviously, because you want it to work for you. But this one, I mean, it's tricky.
Moving on to the next one.
Moving on.
This is the big one. This is the one everybody's been expecting. This is Crossing the Mummers Ford. I have to say, I agree with it pretty much wholeheartedly. There were actually some erratas thrown around on that one, and this is one time where I actually feel like the restricted list was the better choice, because it was such a strong option for a lot of houses to shore up one of their weaknesses. You know, and I liked making it restricted and giving them that option. You know, here is a strong way to offset your weakness, or you can pick one of your other, you know, in-theme restricted cards, you know, plus changing it too drastically lowers the playability of the entire river cycle. But, you know, I guess maybe that's a comment on how FFG balanced out that cycle's worth of abilities on the plots more than anything else. But anyway, I'm in favor of it.
Yeah, I am in favor of it as well. For now, I will say, like, it's ridiculous how many cards, some players have been able to generate with the river plots. Now, the river plots are cool. Like, the idea is cool. Mummers kind of pushed it over the edge, I think, a little too far. But I think that FFG wants people to play those. They want them, like, it's a new idea. People like the synergistic plots, city plots. And, you know, we have city plots, and now we have rivers. I think that this, I don't think it'll last again. This is another one where I'm just like, I think that maybe an errata could be coming down the line if it proves that players aren't playing it anymore. You know, because, I mean, we've talked about how, like, well, the good players, I think, you know, I put in quotations, the good players will see that, you know, with the rivers, you kind of limit yourself on the things that your plots can do. But at the same time, you're still gaining a ton of cards in a game where card advantage is key. So I would like to see an errata to, you know, reveal and draw. But I understand not wanting to errata cards because that's, you know, they're not going to play how they read anymore.
I mean, yeah, it should have been restricted. I think it's the right call. It's appropriate. I mean, we were starting to see, even when it wasn't restricted, it was seeing less play as people remembered that plots that do things are still pretty cool.
All right, so not much debate on that one at all.
No, unfortunately not.
Yeah, I think everybody just agreed that it was the right call to do something. Well, we also had a few cards removed from the Joust restricted list. And three of those, I think we can discuss in one lump. That's going to be Fury of the Lion, Fury of the Stag, and Fury of the Sun. I mean, overall, I suppose I'm okay with it. I think just for bookkeeping's sake, it would have been much better to go ahead and just unrestrict all six of them. I know a lot of people argue the varying power level of the to-be events really alters the standing of the Fury plots. But I just personally don't feel like it alters it enough for them to be problematic in the current environment. You know, the individual effects of the Furies themselves got balanced out a little bit with the errata to Fury of the Stag. And, you know, the events are pretty good, but we also just had a ton more cancel enter the environment. You know, they can still be canceled by the classic paper shield, which, you know, may still wind up being the most common cancel we see, but we got the new Royal Decree, and we've got Harrenhal, and, you know, I mean, if those events are important enough for whatever they're going to do, you're probably going to find a character to kill for that Harrenhal, you know, if they're bringing back, say, the new prized Daenerys Targaryen with To Be a Dragon. So, I don't know. I really feel like all six should have come off, but whatever.
That'd have been ridiculous. You're so dumb.
Why?
Like, to be a Kraken, just give Greyjoy more cancel.
More cancel. We just had more cancel enter the environment. Like, at this point, it almost makes me say, like, what does any more cancel matter on top of that?
Well, like you said, like, to be a dragon with Dany is bananas, and to be a wolf has always been an extremely solid card. I just...
Solid, but I still wouldn't claim it's, you know, game-breaking or at least severely tilting as some of the other stuff.
The Targ one nukes a dude. I don't even know what the Greyjoy one does, but...
It discards.
Discards a character. Yeah, discards a character, and the Stark one kills the thing. I mean, those are all very powerful effects, all three. And I just... They're great stats, they're great openers. Yeah. I just don't... They're significantly better than the three that came off. To say that all six coming off would have boosted all six houses fairly is ridiculous.
No, I'm not saying it would have boosted them all fairly or equally. I'm just saying that I don't think that them coming off would have been an out-of-line, unbalancing factor in the meta right now with the cards we have available. And, you know, for those houses, you know, at least a couple of those are houses that leaned on the river plots pretty heavily. And, you know, if you want to give them a little extra incentive to maybe move away from those, even on top of the restriction, that would definitely be a way to do it.
I think yours is lazy.
There's something to be said for that. That's why I said from a mental bookkeeping standpoint, I would really love to see all six on or off.
Yeah. I honestly don't think even the three that came off should have come off. Like, we don't need those anymore. We don't need them in the game anymore. Honestly, I think we should just ban them. Just get rid of them. They're 5-7 ones. They have really, really good stats.
They don't have the best stats, though, Daryl.
That's true. They're not 4-5 ones.
Exactly.
But, like, I'm just, like, I understand that their effects, the three that have come off, there's a lot of plots out there that are just better than that, like, you know, effect-wise and whatnot. But we don't need them. We don't need them in the game anymore, so why even deal with them? Why even deal with, you know, having one player who really likes one house being like, oh, man, I really wish I could play my Fury, and having another player who can't play his Fury because it's deemed too good in the competitive world. You know, this is, again, just my, you know, my push for the casual player, you know. That
how drunk are you?
I've had a little bit of this.
This conversation is madness. Can I say that?
Why is this madness?
This whole thing. Will wants all of them off or all of them on. You would have banned all six plots?
Yeah.
Like, I don't...
Why even deal with them?
I mean, I'm not sure I'm with
banning. I don't understand any of
this. What do we need them for? What do we need them for?
Why do we need cards in general?
Why do we need the Furies? Did you miss the Furies? Was every day you were like, oh man, I sure wish I could fit a Fury in my plot deck. Like, this isn't like back, you know, in 2010 when we didn't have a very large card pool and was like, hell yeah, I'm gonna put this 5-7 one in there. I mean, but we're past that. Either, it, you know what I mean? Like, who's going to play him anyways? Nobody's going to play him anyways on the restricted list. It only hits two houses. You're going to use that as your restricted card?
I don't know how to... I don't understand the argument for banning them.
My argument for banning them is that we don't need them anymore. The game doesn't need them. So why bother with even having three to take off or three to take on? Or anything like that. Like, why even bother with it?
Why?
Fuck those plots. That's what I'm saying, is fuck those plots. Fuck all of them.
This is ridiculous.
No, it's not.
This
it's
is the Daryl everyone knows and loves. This is what the listeners have been waiting for.
I don't think anybody's been waiting for this.
2C, 1C, not pulling any punches.
I'm going to make a fuck those plots t-shirt now.
Oh my goodness, please do.
I have made t-shirts before, so if something, I feel like I'm going to get
that
out
t-shirt
of somewhere.
Again this year. You should also make me one.
I will think about it. The joke is so gone and faded.
Oh, so gone and faded.
But it was so good. It was so perfect.
If there had been like a dozen of us wearing those, that would have been great. For the confused listeners.
I made shirts for Gen Con. I told you guys that, right?
What?
Daryl's shirt. My sister works at a screen printing company, and I'm having them made for Gen Con.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
What t-shirts are they? Is it Fuck Those Plots?
South Will Rise Again ones.
Oh, are you?
There we go.
Nice. I did not know that.
I think I told you, but you may have been drunk.
Surprise. It happens, yeah. Surprise. But, I mean, that's just how I feel about it. It truly, absolutely is. I don't miss them. Don't care to see them come. Don't care to see them go. We don't need them.
Well, you know what? On that note, I think we might as well move on to the next one.
All right.
You know, I think that's the only viable option we have left. And the other card that came off is Melisandre's Scheme. I think I'm okay with this one, personally. Looking at the results, Bear was still the lowest performing house. So giving them a little boost, but not just an over-the-top one, seems pretty reasonable to me.
Yeah, according to the all-important annals, Bear sucks right now. So anything that can get them from choking on themselves is probably good.
Yeah, I can totally agree with Bear needing a boost. They really do. At least a little bit of one.
Only a little bit.
Only a tip of
just
of one.
No more.
Tip of a boost. That's right.
We have gone so downhill so fast. I love
it. Yeah.
We blew our wad early.
It's I think the highlight was really the bloodthirst discussion, and it's all downhill from there. Thankfully, we are almost done. Now we flip over to the melee restricted list. There's only a couple changes to it, so I think we can kind of hit that pretty quickly. One, I'm not sure even really needs further discussion. Rather, I guess that's two. They're lumped together here in my mind. That's Desperate Measures and Blessed by the Maiden. Both got added in Melee as well. I mean, it's obvious FFG there is just carrying the same line of reasoning across to Melee. And, you know, I at least don't blame them. They're being consistent, so that's good.
It'd be even easier in Melee with all the plots. I mean, combo's something you really have to watch. Because, I mean, everyone's dropping Searchers first turn. I mean, we saw it a couple years back with that, like, six-character infinite combo thing. I mean, it is very much more doable in Melee than it ever would be in Joust. So, reeling that in there. If it had to be on one of the two, I think Melee is the one it definitely needed to be on, so.
Yeah. Well, and then we've also got another addition to the Martell Arsenal of Restricted Cards, this time in Melee. We have two of the Spears added. You know, again, I think this is fairly consistent for FFG and Melee, kind of trying to temper the big power rush cards in Melee so it's not just such a, you know, turn one, turn two, blitz kind of thing. But I do find it interesting, especially when Daryl mentioned when we were discussing Bloodthirst, that maybe it would be good for FFG to try and explore, you know, a new theme for Martell. And I do kind of want to throw out there that I think FFG really did try that. Martell got a lot of power related cards for a little while there. A bunch more renowned guys and, you know, events that granted power and some new attachments that they could give them power and such. And so all of their control effects turned out to be a problem in Joust, and now their rush effects are a problem in Melee. So they are just damned if they do, damned if they don't there.
Yeah. It's actually quite sad.
Let's ban them all.
There we go. Ban the Martell House card. I think.
What,
you know,
why deal with them?
First fuck those plots.
So when was the last time that you sat down to build a deck and you thought, man, I really wish I could use that Martell House card?
I do it all the time. I'm serious. I love Martell. I've always been a Martell player. But with, I don't know, with, you know, I play a lot for fun. I do. And, you know, Martell, a lot of the time, either if you're not playing their tier one dope ass shit, you're not winning ever. So.
Not winning.
You're That's not winning. With their tier
the
one
new
dope
hashtag,
ass shit.
Not winning.
I'll be live tweeting that all Gen Con long.
Oh yeah, that sucker is going out from our official accounts for sure. All right, so I guess that brings us out of the restricted list changes, and we get to keep moving on through the FAQ here. We've got a new entry under card effect interpretation. In the 3.6 section on triggered effects, there's a new paragraph that clarifies further: when choosing targets for triggered effects, the player triggering the effect must choose targets that could lead to a successful resolution. So, what the heck does that actually change, guys?
I don't know. I still don't understand it. I'm the wrong person to talk about it.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, no, actually this one I hear has to do with a little tweak because of Game of Savas and, you know, the ability to play it and force the determination on your opponent's end of whether they're going to choose or not choose a character. It was kind of a corner case there, and one of the really rules guru-y people can probably give a better breakdown of the specific situation than I can.
Well, like, I have to call Ben all the time. Like, the other day, I was playing someone and they had no non-unique locations out. I had to call and be like, can I play Direct Assault? And we decided I could, because I choose a character, gets a +2.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still do challenges with claim if they don't have stuff. You can still entry if they have no hand, military if they have no characters, power if they have no power.
That
so I was like,
sense.
Yeah, it's fine. But like, I just hate how much I have to think about it now. As dumb and counterintuitive as the old rule was, you at least knew that if you could do it, you could do it.
Yeah.
And now it's a little more confusing.
Yeah.
And I saw they have a lot of judges on hand at Gen Con, because my hand's going to be going up a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I really hate that that they had to make that move. I understand why they did it, but it doesn't mean I have to like it. But Southron Stronghold didn't really come up with Janos. I don't really remember what the main catalyst was with this whole thing, but it kind of sucks.
Janos.
Yeah, Janos, I think, kicked off the original... Or I say original, the initial this time around questioning about the triggering of effects and whether you could stand him while you were at draw cap was one of the things that started that downhill slide.
Lame.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh well.
All right. Let's see. What else do we have in that handy bright red text? I love, by the way, that FFG color codes the changes to their tournament, to their FAQ, I wish they would color code the changes to their tournament rules as well, instead of just writing the word new next. So there you go. Ah, yes, there's a new one here. There's an entry in the timing flowcharts of the challenges phase. Now, in the challenge resolution section of that, in that framework action there, I think people have kind of gotten used to the general order of it, but now they have really clarified the exact order of renown versus deadly. So deadly is resolved now after renown. It is the last step in that framework action window for a given challenge, that is.
And that's just formalizing it. Like, that's always been the way it was. They're just putting it to paper.
Well, sort of. I've seen on some of the rules board that it makes for an interesting quirk, because now that deadly is a framework action, that it makes Cat of the Canals vulnerable to deadly when she was not previously.
Lame.
Yeah, so now deadly is a framework action that counts the number of characters with deadly rather than an actual card effect doing it. So, interesting little quirk for, like, 99% of games. That particular tweak is never going to matter. It just formalizes that timing so that people have that down.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Great.
All right. Do we have anything else that comes up?
Nope.
We do. We have an actual question entry on when do you resolve deadly. What's that?
They have those in there?
Yeah. They actually have questions in the frequently asked questions document. They're buried at the end after everything else. And there's a question there that is, when do you resolve deadly? Which pretty much just references the timing chart a page or two above, and says the deadly is resolved during step 5 of the challenge resolution framework action window after renown is claimed. Note that the deadly keyword enables a character to contribute to the deadly count, and it is the framework step itself that enacts a deadly kill based on the result of that count. So that's the part that clarifies it is a framework action now, and thus hits Cat of the Canals.
Lovely.
Yep.
Well, there you go.
Let's see, we've got another few questions added here at the very end of the document. Why that one gets inserted in the middle of the question section and all of the other new ones appear to get added at the end, I don't know.
Someone important asked it.
Yeah, I guess so. We've got one in here, and I'm pretty sure this one came up in our meta a couple months ago. Does Longship Maiden's Bane lose the immunity granted by House of Dreams while it's a character?
Yes,
I paraphrased there for a little bit, and I think I'll paraphrase the answer as well, but basically, yes, it does lose the immunity because it loses all of its other card types. And since House of Dreams specifically references a location, if Longship Maiden's Bane quits being a location, it loses its immunity.
Womp womp.
Yep. Pretty straightforward there when you have the explanation spelled out, though I definitely understand the original confusion about that issue. Okay, here's an interesting one. And I know Kyle talks about using Betrayal at the Wall pretty often. This is, what happens if I reveal Betrayal at the Wall as my final plot card, and its when revealed effect attempts to resolve when I do not have a plot deck? Kyle, do you know what happens?
No, I actually don't.
Okay. Well, you actually are not able to reveal a new plot.
That's sad.
Yep.
Womp womp. It's a lot of bad news.
Yeah, Daryl's
just Canal sucks. Maiden's Bane sucks. Betrayal at the Wall sucks.
There's never a good answer to a frequently asked question. It's only the rarely asked questions that are good.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, honestly, a lot of these questions really make me think this document should be titled an RAQ, because some of these are real corner cases.
Someone bugged Nate enough that he felt the need to put it in here.
Yes. All right, here's our next one. What is the pregame setup procedure for revealing house and agenda choices, choosing whether or not to mulligan, choosing and revealing number of cards setup, and revealing the identities of setup cards? Well, 99% of that is in the tourney rules document. So Will personally is going to refer people to the tourney rules document. But I will say that along with that, the FAQ entry clarifies that this happens after all players are seated and ready to begin, which amuses me that we have to spell things out that much.
Hey, if you don't, someone will be dumb.
Yeah, someone will. So it looks like step one here, according to the FAQ, is that the first player, which is determined randomly, say a coin flip or something, announces their house and agenda, followed by the other players in clockwise order. And then it says, note that a player must choose a location for the House of Dreams agenda, if applicable, when he or she performs this step. And then it looks like everything else plays out according to the tourney rules document from there about shuffling and drawing setup hands and so on and so forth. So there you have it. I guess it does matter.
It does, because now you can get cutesy with those dual House of Dreams locations.
Yeah.
Because only half the time will you know what your opponent's playing.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely had that come up in Tulsa against Alex Kern, who was playing House of Dreams. Well, it was a Targaryen House of Dreams, normally a Dragon Pit deck. But when he saw me with Baron Knights of the Hollow Hill, he really hemmed and hawed over his decision and wound up taking Aegon's Hill instead. I mean, honestly, I don't think either location was a big problem for my deck, but there you have it. It definitely happened.
Well, except like Stark Bear Island, if you can just start to change it out to Win Heron Hall or something. But now you only know half the time.
Yep, sure enough. I mean, for sanity's sake, I still say that should have been revealed. I do say at the moment that they should have just been revealed simultaneously, like plots, and like set up cards, but oh well.
Well, and now you have to, like, hide your house when you're getting all your stuff ready.
Yeah, I know. How much of
a... Like, it's a sneaky thing. Like, what are you playing? No, what are you playing?
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see how it actually shakes out at a tournament. I don't care. I'm going to drop what I'm playing. If you can beat it, you can beat it. If you can't, you can't.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the gameplay itself is going to matter way more than that odd case of House of Dreams. So, like, whatever, I'll go ahead and have it sitting there probably. Though that does bring up an important question. If my opponent sees me with my house card already sitting face up as I get my deck out, can they call a judge over because I'm breaking the rules?
Dude, I hope so. Because if so, I'm going to totally get you DQ'd.
Yeah, I know you will, Daryl. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it actually opens up a window for awkwardness that wasn't quite there before. Like, if somebody really wants to be a dick, but oh well.
We'll see.
Yep. Alright, what else do we have? We have, is Cato the Canals immune to stealth? The answer here is stealth resolves as a card effect that targets a character on the defending side. As she's immune to opponent's card effects, Cato the Canals cannot be chosen as a target for stealth. Does anyone else find this very interesting? The same FAQ update that makes deadly, also a keyword, actually affect Cat of the Canals?
I don't know.
I just don't know anymore.
She's been out forever. Why do we suddenly care so much?
I don't know. I mean, and she's not heavily played either. But I thought it had been well understood for a long time that, you know, she couldn't be stealthed because it was a card effect. But I don't know. There you have it. It had to be entered in the in the clarifications here. Alright, here's another one. Can you save a card that has been killed or discarded to pay a cost? Can you cancel any act that is being performed to pay a cost? And no, there is no save-cancel opportunity in paying costs. And I'm pretty sure, wasn't that at least half of that about the save already tackled from another angle at one point, clarifying that effects don't go off anyway if you save that character? I mean, I guess now it's saying, say you tried to kill something to Harrenhal, that you can't even attempt to save that character, but...
Thanks. Yeah. They have to die to pay the cost.
Right. Yep.
Yep.
Alright. Here's another one. I think this is the last one. For any card that specifies any number, can you choose zero as the number? Does a resolution that affects zero entities qualify as a successful resolution of the effect?
Heck yeah, right?
Yeah, the number zero may be chosen for such attacks, but the resolution that affects zero entities is not considered successful. Further, if choosing the number zero is the only means of anticipating a successful resolution of such an effect, the effect cannot be initiated as per the 3.6 entry. So I'm really confused here that this answer simultaneously says, oh yeah, you can choose zero, you just can't actually choose zero because then you can't play the effect. So why not just start with the part that says that zero would not count as successful resolution, and thus, according to section 3.6, you can't do it. Why start by telling me that, yes, you can do it, because you can't? Because
they wanted to get your hopes up. That's why.
Unless the part that says that you can't is the incorrect part, which I really don't think it is. But, I mean, they give two different answers within that exact same text.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either.
Contradictions.
I mean, it's FFG. Boy, are they well known for it. There you have it, guys. That is the entire FAQ and tourney rules update. Loads of excitement there. What do you guys think overall?
I like it.
I love it. Want some more of it.
Oh, I wanted to say that.
I'm sorry, guys. No, but seriously, overall, I think most of the community, and I feel like it's like 95% of the community, is in favor of the FAQ. Maybe I'm wrong. I would love to hear it if you're not, and why. But I think that right now, I really don't think that a lot of the stuff that's on there right now will be on there later on down the road. I mean, obviously, later on down the road, it's going to change a little bit, but I really do think that most of this is just to, kind of put a Band-Aid on things until they figure out what they're going to do. Which is kind of the point, not necessarily the point of the restricted list, but it's definitely been a way that they've used the restricted list, kind of a tool to, okay, we need to, fix this, Or see if we can't get around this, so let's just put it on here for now instead of trying to come out with an emergency errata or something like that for it. So
I think overall I'm pretty happy with it myself. Nothing too outlandish there. A lot of stuff the community expected, and despite a couple minor quibbles, I'll live with it.
Props and slops. I have a slop.
All right, what's that?
You guys
that?
Mind if I just start us off with a slop? All right. So I'm going to go ahead and slop myself, as well as the card, The Brave Companions.
Ooh.
Mainly myself for not reading the card, because you guys all know I hate reading cards. I don't believe in it. I gave it up a long time ago. Why start now? But seriously, it's so much worse than I thought it was. I've been messing around with neutral, and I did not know that I had to kneel my house card to take that neutral character and attach it to my house card. Because then I have to kneel my house card to get the card off. Come on, man. Like, what I would have preferred it to do is just, it could only house one card at a time. I think that would have been just fine. But, nope. Can't do that, so now it works, I guess, every other turn. I don't know, but it's kind of lame for keeping my, what was I using? House Bannerman or whatever? The guys that you kneel them to ignore the out-of-house penalty? Like,
yeah.
Come on. I'm not abusing. I'm just using.
I just want to double check something. Kyle, when we did the review of that card on this show, didn't we specifically talk about how much it sucked that you could only, you know, really use it every other turn? Okay, he refuses to back either one of us.
Sorry, my thing was muted and I couldn't hit the button. My bad.
All right, I'm sorry, I'll stop laughing. Go ahead, Kyle.
I don't know. Are you saying that I said it sucked?
No.
Oh my god.
I'm just saying, in general, didn't that come up during our review that on this show that Daryl was a part of, that you can only use it every other turn? I seem to remember that did.
I believe so, yes.
Oh man. I don't remember us talking about that. Well, that sucks. That's really sad, because I think that it could have been, I mean, I'm not saying that's not playable now, because obviously it will still have its uses, but I really liked it the way that it was. The way that I thought it was.
The way we were.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, you know what? I'm going to throw out some slops as well, and this one also has to do with a card review we did recently, though this one was on the previous pack. And I honestly can't believe I didn't notice it when we did the review, but I was building decks and stuff over the weekend with physical cards, and realized I just can't stand this card. That card, my dear friends, is House Dane Escort. Because, you know, listeners, I'm going to give you a second. I want you to go get this card, you know, call it up on CardGameDB or Agot Cards, or better yet, go grab yourself a physical copy. Okay, you got it in front of you now? Good. You see the guys? He's pulling on his glove. He's got the purple cloak, and there's a ship in the background, and this dock with the crates, and it's misty or foggy and overcast and whatnot. You got that whole image right there in front of you? Okay, now I'm going to read you the flavor text. He could see their banners flying as the riders emerged from the green of the living wood in a long, dusty column. Now look at that art. Now look at that flavor text. Now look at that back at the art. Back at the flavor text. I'm on a horse. Anyway. I love those Old Spice commercials. Props to them. But slops to this card and flavor text that make zero sense together. They blatantly contradict each other.
Yeah.
Kyle, you got anything this week? Daryl, you got anything else? Anybody?
Yes, I have another prop. Well, I have a prop, I guess, for today. And that is, I started to read the book. So somebody asked, you know, hey, what happened to Daryl's reading? I am still reading. I am doing a lot of other stuff right now, and I have definitely slowed down on my reading. I'm not lying. I'm serious.
We made fun of you at the draft about your lack of reading.
I'm about to prop the book The Expanse, Leviathan Wakes, by James S.A. Corey, which is a pen name. It's actually two guys.
Whoa.
I know, that's a little...
Do their names start with S and A?
I can't remember. Maybe.
Wow.
You're just making it up in here, Carol.
Yeah, I know, it's all made up anyways. Anyways, I'm going to prop that book. So far, it's been really great. I need to stop flipping between books like I have been doing, but whatever. I'll do what I want. I'm a grown-ass man, okay? So, propping that book, you should check it out. It's a trilogy, and the third book just came out, I think, last month. So, check it out, The Expanse. It's sci-fi, space opera stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
I just got in today, actually, my Flocked Ghost from Comic-Con. I had to go to the eBays to get that, but it is phenomenal, so I will totally prop that. He's all fuzzy. I got home, and Danny's like, I can't believe you bought this. This is dumb. It is a Comic-Con exclusive. And last year was Headless Ed, so I definitely got him. I looked to see what this year's was, and it was a Flocked Ghost. It's like, that seems cool. So she's like, this is dumb. And she opens up, and she gets out the little Funko Pop, and she pets it. She goes, wow. And this makes me way more happy than I thought it would.
You're like, I know it.
So, yeah, so now Fuzzy Ghost sits next to our Jon Snow on our little shelf of Funko Pops. But he's pretty slick. I like him a lot.
Cool.
Cool. Well, you got another one?
Yeah, you know, I think it's been a little while since I've propped anything comic-related. I don't think I've propped Future's End on here yet, one of the weekly special events that DC has going on right now. Brian Azzarello's writing it, who is awesome, anyway. I first encountered him on 100 Bullets, which is an entirely different prop that's amazing. But anyway, so the general plot on this one is that Brother Eye, this all-seeing sentient satellite, if you're not familiar with the DCU, has decided to exterminate humanity for one reason or another in the near future, and kind of replaced everyone with these cyborg-y infected technovirus things, right? They aren't OMAX for anybody who's thinking that. And we see the last few survivors trying to hold them off and whatnot, so that this time machine can be rigged up for Bruce Wayne to go back in time and try and stop the whole nasty affair from going down. Only things go south, and a certain Batman Beyond, Terry McGinnis...
Oh, badass!
Yeah, gets sent in his stead. So it kind of pulls Terry back into... Well, not quite the current, New 52 universe. He doesn't make it as far back as he was supposed to go, so things have already started.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. I mean, spoiler alert for, the first issue.
Dude, I love Terry McGinnis.
Yeah, and it's a weekly event anyway, so there's gonna be 52 of them. And yeah, it's just, it's been a good ride so far. I've liked all of these weekly events that DC's done over the last, I don't know, probably 5 years or so is kind of when they started doing them. And all the ones that I've read have actually been really, really good. So I give them props for having that stuff lined out way in advance and coordinated to handle all that.
Nice. So Future's End, does that have any correlation with Future Sex? By any chance, the Justin Timberlake album?
Not that I know of, but you might try listening to it backwards while you read the comics and see what happens.
I'm going to slop both of you. How do either of you get laid? Have you heard yourself in the last 30 minutes? This is ridiculous.
Hey, Future Sex was a great album. Check it out.
No.
Timberlake know more songs will get you laid.
Timberlake will totally get you laid.
Or at least he'll get laid, and you can watch him get laid if you're good friends with him, like I am.
Wow.
Two-way mirror.
No. God damn.
Does anybody else have a proper slop?
Nope.
All right, well, thank you for listening to another fine episode of Two Champs and a Chump. Feel free to like our Facebook page. We're closing in on 600?
Yeah, I think so. Or
something like that. Please like our Facebook page, okay? We need that affirmation in our lives.
Don't say we like that.
There's direct correlation to being happy in life and how many likes your Facebook page has. It's a true story. Also, you can feel free to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/@2champs1chump. Follow us on Twitter. We need it. I'm just kidding. But you can if you want. Also, you can feel free to email us at 2champs1chump@gmail.com. What are you trying to say? Why are you ruining this for me, Kyle?
Huh? I don't know. I don't know.
You don't let... You know what? You're pissing me off so much. I'm just going to have to take you to the danger zone! Turn around, there's nothing to see here.